I'm delighted to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Victor Reyes, Legislative Director of Conservation Voters New Mexico, and Liliana Castillo, Communications Manager. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. And at this time of year, of course, Conservation Voters New Mexico is deeply engaged in what's happening in the New Mexico legislature and specifically trying to protect the land, air, and water of this state. This is a 60-day session. Lots going on. Let's talk about some of the what we refer to as good and bad bills in the legislature.
Sure. So at Conservation Voters, our priority is protecting against environmental rollbacks that may occur. We pride ourselves on having a 10-year record of 100% defense of defeating bad environmental legislation. And so this year is no different than any other legislative session, unfortunately. We've seen some assaults on some of the safeguards in our environment, as well as some of the things that foster some of the renewable energy production that increase that our state has seen. And so we've been fighting them. And so we've seen a few. There are a few bills that, you know, have a little bit more traction than others, and we're approaching them head on, and I'd be happy to talk about some of them.
Yeah, go ahead. What are some of the scariest bills that are being put forward in terms of the health of New Mexicans?
Sure. So one of the things that we have seen so far is last week in House Energy, Environment, and Natural Resources Committee, there was an attempt, there's a bill by Representative Scott to reduce the renewable portfolio standards in the state that say that 20% of our energy produced by utilities in the state has to come from renewable sources. And so that's a great measure because of the effects that coal has on the health and safety of our communities. And we've seen those effects. And a lot of the times we see those effects in communities of color, in minority communities, and low-income communities that bear the weight of those effects of this coal production or this fossil fuel production. And so reducing the renewable portfolio standards would just really be a step backwards that we're really committed to preventing.
I mean, it's sort of crazy. I mean, the difference between renewable and non-renewable is right there in the word. Something that is a one-way street. It's used up. What are we going to do when it's gone?
You know, it's really interesting because at the hearing, there was nobody that testified in support of this type of a measure. And when asked, you know, according to the sponsor, he said that there was nobody that had brought it up to him, that he just thought that this was such a important measure because of all the discussions that had happened around renewable energy and all of these attempts to what he calls subsidize renewable energies that he thought was inappropriate. But really, when, you know, oil and gas and other industries, you know, other of the polluting and extractive industries are so heavily subsidized in the state, that argument just didn't make sense. Even though a representative of PNM was there, he didn't speak. He didn't say anything. I'm not sure where they stand on this issue. But for us, it's just such a modest goal that just makes so much sense. And we've been making so much strides in the state. New Mexico is number two in the solar potential, the number two behind the state of Arizona. With the exception of that state, we are the leading state with the potential for production of solar energy. But yet, at the same time, New Jersey produces more solar energy than we do.
I'd love that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It doesn't make sense. In fact, it's very disappointing. And I'm very disappointed that we're not doing more things to encourage solar production in our state. Instead, we're trying to roll back the gains that have been made and the efforts that have been made to make sure that we do start to diversify our energy portfolio in the state.
Maybe it's that we don't have enough wide open space.
You know, I definitely don't think that that's it, but you know, who knows what the thought process is there. I think it's one of those misconceptions and one of those talking points that renewables are bad, that oil and gas is the only revenue resource worth protecting, that our state is, because our state relies so heavily on it, that we need to do everything to make it easier on the oil and gas industry, even if that means taking away the safeguards that protect our communities, the reasonable safeguards, I mind you, that protect our communities.
Yeah, I mean, we talked yesterday on this program about this whole set of preemption bills, and for those who didn't hear the show yesterday, maybe you want to just remind people what that whole issue is about?
Sure. So counties and municipalities and other forms of local governments currently have the ability to impose regulations on oil and gas operations and other types of extractive operations as well. And most of these are very reasonable ordinances, like making sure that a oil and gas operation is not within a certain proximity to a home or a school or a park or something else that, you know, communities go towards. And, you know, there's a wide variety of counties that have them. Even Eddy County has ordinances on oil and gas operations. And, you know, Bernalillo has some sweeping ones, as well as Santa Fe County, that just really are in there to protect the health and safety of their communities. And this is the way that they're able to, you know, the only way to protect them, because the state does not have, in these counties' opinions, the ability to act on these operations. And so we saw an effort. There's actually about 5 pieces of legislation right now that are going on that would preempt or take away these counties and municipalities and local governments' ability to do these types of reasonable regulations on these industries. It's really disappointing to see it passed. The first measure that, you know, has really gained traction is a measure that passed through House Energy, Environment, and Natural Resources Committee that was sponsored by the Majority Leader, Representative Nate Gentry of Bernalillo County, which would have taken away these counties' ability, and it was a very straightforward attempt. And it passed along party lines within the committee, and with amongst, you know, people, representatives of the counties, of municipalities, county commissioners, various leaders of local government came and said, you know, we need these. These are things that are important to us to protect our communities. And still, you know, they acted, even though the majority of the representatives that voted for this legislation, their individual counties have measures to protect their communities. So it was a very disappointing effort to see. There's also right now on the House floor another a memorial that would ask the governor to veto capital outlay requests that would benefit counties that have regulations that impact oil and gas extraction. And
so just a punitive
exactly
bill.
And although it doesn't have the force of a law, it does send a very bad message that local representatives and local counties and municipalities and towns and villages should not have the ability to do what is in the best interest of their communities. And it's disgusting, in my opinion.
It's so funny that, not funny, but weird, that safe drinking water and health and the well-being of citizens should be like a partisan issue.
You know, it's sad. And what's even sadder is that oftentimes the health and the safety and the water and the air that these communities rely on, that our communities rely on, is put on the back burner to the profit-driven mentality of the extractive industries and the polluting industries. And it's very discouraging to see that representatives have that mentality and that act in that way. So we are very committed to fighting against that mentality in the legislature.
One of the things we've learned is that New Mexicans across the political spectrum believe that we need to have healthy air and water for our families and communities for now and the future generations. And the problem becomes that there's a disconnect between the people of New Mexico and then their elected officials. And so the elected officials are not representing necessarily the conservation values of the people of New Mexico. And so that's really where CBNM comes in, and we try to really elevate those voices and make sure that elected officials are representing the values of their people. And
Absolutely. This
is a good example of that, obviously.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the other bills that are being considered before the legislature. By the way, we're talking to the good folks from Conservation Voters New Mexico. One of them is about the transfer of federal public lands.
Yeah, there's a bill right now that had its second committee hearing this past Saturday. It's a bill by Representative Yvette Harrell, and she's proposing that the state enact a study to study the possibility of the transfer of federal public lands to the state. And this is a really, in our eyes, it's a waste of time and resources, because any such action is really held to be unconstitutional by various legal precedents that have come before it. And it's been studied, actually, in other states. And not only did they find that it's unconstitutional, but they held that it's unfeasible to do. They said that the only way that this would become feasible would be if you were to increase the extractive industries on these public lands, and if oil and gas prices were to remain high, which we see that that's just not the case right now. Utah was the state that commissioned that study. These public lands are really best kept in federal hands because of the fact that they're lands that belong to all Americans, not just New Mexicans. And in fact, New Mexicans and Americans agree that this is a bad idea. A bipartisan poll recently came out, and it showed that New Mexicans overwhelmingly agree that these public lands should be held in the federal hands.
Does a state have the right to appropriate federal land?
No, they don't. It would require an act of Congress to do something of that manner. And even if we could, We in the legislature, we've been talking a lot about the cost of forest fires and the millions of dollars that we spend fighting forest fires on state lands. And the truth of the matter is that we don't have the ability to maintain and, you know, fight the fires on these federal lands. Also, federal lands have protections that state lands don't have. One example is the National Environmental Protection Act, the NEPA process, that is required to go through when dealing with federal lands. That same protection doesn't exist on state lands. And so it's really, it's really important that we make sure that they stay in federal hands. It's really, you know, the people that are, when we talk about who's behind this, right, this is a movement that's been going on across the West, and it's fueled by a lot of special interest groups that are using this as a way of trying to say that, you know, trying to combat the federal government. But that's just not appropriate, and I think that it's wrong for New Mexico, and the people have really taken a heart to that and spoken against it.
Which special interest groups?
So one of the groups that's pushing things like this is the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC. They're a group that is fueled by big corporate interests and polluting and extractive industries. And they have created what people refer to as model legislation that's been passed around the states and the people use in their respective legislative bodies to enact these, you know, what I think is atrocious public policy.
So some legislator will take a piece of kind of boilerplate legislation and fill in the blanks with
Correct.
The name of their state.
Exactly.
Right.
And try to get this stuff passed. And it's been, I don't know how effective it's been, but
in a lot of states, it's been pretty effective. You know, we've been able to hold ALEC movements at bay or special interest movements at bay for a long time, especially when it comes to environmental protections. Like I stated a little earlier, it's gained some footing in other states, Utah, for instance, where the bill actually passed. And they're actually litigating that in court, and it's, you know, they spent, for the study, they spent close to $500,000, I think it was $400,000, to pay for the study. And then they went forward, which said that it wasn't feasible, then they went forward with the bill that would have facilitated this transfer, and now they're fighting it in court, and they're just appropriated millions more to fight, continue to fight it in court. And so yeah. we as New Mexicans don't need to be in another lengthy legal battle over something that's clearly wrong for our state.
I mean, when you think about the amount, and kudos to all the great attorneys out there, but when you think about the money that's wasted fighting things like that in court that could be used for teachers and,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And infrastructure and good things.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, this isn't a partisan issue. In fact, Governor Brewer in Arizona vetoed this type of a measure when it came before her. There's bipartisan understanding that this is a bad move for our state and it's a bad move for our country for states to do such a measure.
I think one of the biggest things with the transfer of public lands is not only that it does not make sense financially, because it just doesn't, obviously, but it would really restrict what the public lands are used for. Like right now, public lands are where people go hunt and fish and camp and hike, and New Mexicans and Americans have amazing access to these amazing places. And generally what is seen is, in order for this kind of a move to be feasible, a lot of the land would either have increased drilling, mining, that kind of stuff, or be privatized, be sold off to the highest bidder, essentially. In Nevada, after studying it, their task force recommended selling off 30,000 acres of federal lands just in the first year to cover
right.
the state's management costs.
Right.
I mean, it's just not something that is going to, everyone says it's not going to change anything, and that's just not simple. That's just not true.
And
yeah.
You know, Mary Charlotte, one of the things that's been really inspiring to see is in the first hearing that happened, there was an outpouring of opposition that came from the governors and the leadership of various federally recognized indigenous nations and tribes against this type of legislation. They feel that this would be a bad move towards protecting the land that they see as being culturally significant. And so they think that this is a bad move. And it was so impressive. I mean, the president of the Navajo Nation, the head of the council of the Hickory Apache Nation, the heads of so many of the pueblos across our state that came and they spoke and they said, this is a bad move. And we really would like to see this measure opposed.
So let's go on to the question of public-private partnerships.
Sure. It's an interesting one to talk about because a lot of people hear the term public-private partnerships and they say, well, that's a good thing. We do want to encourage private investment. It's been regarded as a very proactive way of funding different projects. And in some instances it is, but there's a House bill, House Bill 299, by Representative Larry Larrañaga, which would facilitate for the management and the facilitation by private industry of things that are best left held in public hands. And that includes water services, wastewater services, power plants, so many different things that people really depend on and rely on that would be able to be put into private control. And so we're very adamantly opposed to it, and it's very dangerous. It's a sweeping measure, and it's something that's been seen in other states, but ours is the most broad in its application of what can be done, which makes it the most dangerous. And our state legislation doesn't have any of the safeguards that other states have. And, you know, there's a lot of case studies that have to do with this issue, which one of them is the Indianapolis case study. And there they did, I think it was 20 years, and I think it was $1.5 billion project for the management of a water facility. And what ended up happening is that when this transfer happened, safeguards went down, the cost of services to ratepayers went up, the standard, the quality went down, so much so that they had to issue a boil water notice that shut down schools. Now the city of Indianapolis had to pay millions of dollars to litigate it, and it was investigated by a federal grand jury. There's so many different examples.
And that was an example of the privatization of water?
Of water through these public-private partnerships, correct.
Yeah.
And so it's a very dangerous step that Representative Larrañaga is proposing that our state undergo the ability for that to happen.
Right now, what kind of safeguards do we have against that?
Well, right now, these entities have to be in public control. These
okay.
have to be in public control, and that gives them a certain amount of oversight and a certain amount of regulations. And another thing that this bill would do is it would let these deals be made without any public input. The only time that these contracts would have any type of oversight would be if they were over $50 million and they were for a longer period than 35 years. That leaves a lot of leeway for a lot of abuses to a lot of people and a lot of the water services that a lot of people rely on. And so we think it's a very bad idea.
Let's talk about uniform environmental covenants.
And that's an interesting one. That's actually, you know, one of the ones that's going through the legislative process right now. And what really it boils down to is it becomes an end run around cleanup and an end run around the Water Quality Act. And what happens is that these polluting industries, they have this land that's become polluted. And instead of remediating this land, they would, if this legislation were to pass, they would be able to put what they call an environmental covenant on the land that would restrict its usage for, you know, a certain percentage for whatever uses. But what happens is that the groundwater that's polluted under this land does not have to be remediated to the proper standards. And as we know, groundwater doesn't stay in place. We're in a state that 9 out of 10 New Mexicans rely on groundwater for their source of drinking water. It's a dangerous measure that we can't do. The sponsor of this legislation says that this legislation has been passed in other states and it's had success, but the states that it's been passed in have been states that are rich in water. They're mostly states on the east coast of the United States that have a lot of water resources, and we don't. And there's not states that rely on groundwater for their source of drinking water. So it's a very dangerous measure. It's something that we saw in the past. You know, we hope that we wouldn't see it again. It came back this year, as a lot of these zombie bills come back, and we have to
eat your brains.
To pollute That's our okay. brains if we let them pass. And so so we're very adamantly opposed to it, and we hope that that common sense prevails when it's heard this coming week.
Again, we're talking to Conservation Voters New Mexico, and let's see, there's a couple more things. One of them is the right to farm, and that's a kind of a complicated one because there's already a right to farm in New Mexico.
Right, correct. And so basically right now, and I want to make it very clear that Conservation Voters New Mexico supports the right to farm. We support family farmers. We support farming in New Mexico. We support the agricultural industry. But what we don't support is the ability for polluters to pollute our environment without any form of recourse from individuals.
So there's a bill
there's several bills. One of them would limit the amount of the people who can sue for damages by agricultural operations that pollute their neighbors and adjoining areas. And, you know, we're not talking about small family farms, or we're not talking about the middle-sized farms. We're talking about large agricultural operations that have contaminating factors, that have runoff water from, you know, that contaminates water sources, that have flies that, you know, that spread across the adjoining communities and really provide health risks to those communities. And one of them would limit the amount of people that can take recourse through the legal system.
So basically, this is a kind of disguised protection for industrial farming.
Correct. Yes. You know, and another one would make illegal and or improper or negligent, or there are various varying forms of this legislation. It would exempt them from other people taking recourse that's currently provided within the current statute of the Right to Farm Act.
So let me see if I understand this correctly. If this bill is passed, you won't be able to sue people for doing illegal things on their farms?
So if, what it would do is it would propose to exempt illegal agriculture operations from nuisance laws, and while expanding the current grandfather clause that exists for existing agricultural operations. So right now, under the current nuisance laws, you can take legal recourse if there's an illegal agricultural operation taking place. And what this bill would do is take away that ability.
So basically what you're doing is you're kind of messing with the system of checks and balances of the United States, where the courts are your recourse for dealing with people who are doing very bad things.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's, again, it goes to show you that there are very powerful lobbies within the state legislature. And there are people that are pushing this type of legislation that does not have the best interest of our communities in mind, and you know, it's wrong, and that's why we're taking a stand against it.
Now, are there any positive bills that you are supporting during this session?
Sure. One of them is the extension of the current solar tax credit that exists. That's a bill that's being carried by Representative Stapleton on the House side and Senator Mimi Stewart on the Senate side, and I believe it was tabled on the House side, but it still is fighting for its life on the Senate side. And what it would do is it would extend the current solar tax credit that's available to people who purchase solar equipment. Usually, Conservation Voters in New Mexico does not support tax credits because we believe that we need revenue to enforce existing laws and safeguards on our environment. But we do support existing tax exemptions or credits that do and have shown a positive impact. And this is one of those ones. It's, you know, it's the solar industry has really started, finally, after such a long time, started to take hold in this state. And for us to just let this tax credit expire, it would be a disservice to all the progress that has been made so far.
Anything else you want to let people know before we go today?
Well, I'll definitely add that if people wanted to, I think the most important thing for people to realize is that our legislators are waiting to hear from their constituents. They want to know what people care about. So we at CVNM try to help people do that as much as possible. And the best way to do that is sign up for our email list, where we send out really short-term action items that are strategic at the best moment possible. And so if you go to our website at cvnm.org, you can sign up for our email list, and there will be lots of ways to take action. And there's also a lot of information just there on the website about our legislative work and ways to get involved and take action.
And our agenda is online as well, so our positions that we take. And also, our C3 organization, Conservation Voters Education Fund, sponsors a website called protectnm.org. And what that website does, it's a way to look, it lists all of the bills that could have a potential environmental impact, and it gives an analysis of it. And it tells you where it is in the process, and it also gives you some ways that it could be beneficial or some ways that it could hurt. And so that's a great resource for people that are looking to find out a little bit more about some of the issues affecting our air, land, and water.
CVNM stands for Conservation Voters New Mexico. Victor Reyes is the legislative director. Liliana Castillo is the communications manager. I want to thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.